This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, the 26th day of August, 2025. I want to welcome everyone to the program tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks beyond, I mean, from the bottom of my heart, thanks for your patience in everything we're going through with our schedule, with everything. Thank you. You know, I pray for the people who have been with us so long. I mean, back in the Blog Talk Radio days, and even before that, I mean, we're coming up on 15 years of broadcasting, podcasting. And you know, I'm not sure how we're still standing. I don't say that as a woe is me kind of thing. I'm trying to figure out, you know, we're bloodied, beaten, knocked around quite a bit, but we're still here. But more importantly, you're with us. The people who have been with us so long and the people I've gotten to know. I did an hour with Wisconsin Christian News Live TV. I think, what was it, six? Yeah, six Eastern. And I have to say that I saw some and heard from some very, a very familiar voice and saw some familiar people in the studio audience, and it was virtual studio audience, obviously. And I thought, you know, how great is that? I mean, friendships forged in the crucible of whatever this is. And I mean friendships. So thank you. Thank you for your patience. Today commemorates the fourth, well, it was on this day, 4 years ago, August 26th, 2021. I don't know how many people remember this or have heard about this in detail. Abbeygate, the attack during the withdrawal from Afghanistan. This happened at the Hamid Karzai Airport 4 years ago today. It killed 13 of our service members. And this is, the program is not about this, but this is foundational. And thank you, Eric the Tech, for that. Not enough mention is made about the victims. And in any case, and this is what really gets me, for example, serial killers, you know, you can keep that up too, please, because they deserve our acknowledgement, their families, our prayers. But the people behind it, the fist of justice. But what gets me, as you look at that list of names, you can hear about John Wayne Gacy and Ted Bundy. But who speaks about their victims? Can you name a victim of any of the serial killers? Probably not. And again, that's not a criticism of you, but the media, oh, they're interested in the bad guys, which, okay, fine, but pay no attention to the victims. But 4 years ago today, we lost, we lost obviously a whole lot in that withdrawal. This is Joseph Robinette, the vegetable Biden. and the puppet master, Barack Hussein Obama, and the military, the Joint Chiefs of Staff under Biden, the woke leaders, Austin, the fat, black, mask, face shield, rainbow-colored sash, walking. What a disgrace. What a disgrace to the people who served today, who served then. And what a disgrace to all of us. We should be angry. And we should demand justice. I want you to hear from a man, 57 seconds. I want you to hear from a man who survived the attack. And listen, please. There are thousands of short video clips I could play about this Abbey Gate. I probably went through maybe 50 to 70, roughly. But this is one I wanted you to hear. Because this is relevant to the program today. Today we're going to be talking about the anatomy of the most important battle that's facing us today. This is part of that battle, or at least illustrative of part of that battle. The show notes, as always, will be at HagmanPI.com. You click on the link that opens the box, and the show links to the show clips that we use will be there. I'm trying to fix, for whatever reason, the images that you see on Rumble as the static images for the day's show are not transferring to Hagman PI, or maybe 1 in 8, 1 in 7, 1 in 8. I have no idea why. No one has any idea why. No one can fix that. So you'll have to just get used to seeing my ugly mug, and we can't differentiate. We haven't found a way to differentiate between the replace the image. What I'm trying to say is all the program panels look the same, which makes it a little bit rough when you're trying to find a specific program. But having said that, all you have to do is click on the title for today's show, and all of the program notes will be there, including the hyperlinks to the videos. Please consider that like a newsletter of sorts, but you have to go pick it up. Okay. So, this is cut A, video A in the show notes. This is a man who survived. This is 57 seconds from Sean Ryan. This is a guy who was there, but listen to what he says. This is part of the battle that we're facing. Listen to this. Here it is.
He told me some shit that you can't imagine. Like, that guy saw so much overseas, and he said the worst things he ever saw was the Afghanistan pullout.
Dude, do you know who Tyler Andrew Vargas is?
No.
That's the one Marine that survived suicide bombing at Abbey Gate, killed 13 Marines. So I called him. Well, everybody wanted him to come on the show, and I was like, oh, I'm never going to get this guy. Like, all the media, everybody wants him. Hit him on the gram, messaged right back, and he got in, and he's like, I'm so glad that you reached out to me. He's like, I was literally just praying with my fiance that you would reach out, because
wow,
he had just did an ABC Good Morning America interview, interviewed for 7 hours. They released 5 seconds of that interview because it made the administration look so bad. They wouldn't air it. So I got him on, kept getting dinged, you know, by YouTube. They didn't like the real footage, which was actually like from his cell phone that we do previews and shit, to have like his testimony about what happened that day.
I guess I selected the wrong one. That was Sean Ryan talking with Joe Rogan about that man who was there. But did you notice, it's still relevant because Sean Ryan is saying, well, I keep getting dinged by YouTube. What the hell are you still doing on YouTube? I'll tell you why. It's money. It's all about the Benjamins for both sides, for YouTube, because he draws this humongous audience so they can sell advertising and they can manage him. Look, I don't know Sean Ryan. He's probably one of the greatest guys on the planet. Seriously, I don't know him. But it doesn't take Dick Tracy or Sherlock Holmes to figure out what this is all about. Why somebody who wants to convey the truth is on YouTube, which is anti-truth. But that's that. But 4 years ago today, one of the worst moments in American history. I've done this before, but I want to mention, the heck is it now? There it is. I want to mention the equipment left by Biden and his cronies. $8.2 billion worth of equipment in Afghanistan was left. 208 aircraft, including UH-60 Black Hawks and M-17 helicopters. 61,000 military vehicles of all kinds. 258,000 rifles. And those include M-16s and AK-47s. 56,000 machine guns. Where's the anti-gun crowd talking about that? I mean, not that it matters. I mean, it's ridiculous, okay? I'm just saying. 31,000 RPGs, 18,000 gravity bombs, nearly 2,000 mortar systems, more than 1 million mortar rounds. Are these numbers just blowing your brain out? I mean, 234 howitzer guns. Imagine what we could do with that. Do with these. Just imagine. We gave them to the Taliban. We gave them to the Muslim terrorist bastards. We gave them to our enemies. We paid for them, our tax dollars. Biden, not sure which Biden. And his staff of treasonous, traitorous bastards left. Oh, and I'm not done yet. Left that there. 30 million rounds of ammunition. I'm not sure. I think that beats Eric's supply by, I don't know, by about 29.999 million, but who knows? Nearly 100 drones, body armor of all sizes, and biometric security equipment. And of course, you know, the fall of Kabul, the air base there, Bagram Airfield, that sits 25 miles north of Kabul and was known for being the crown jewel of U.S. intelligence operation in the region. We just gave it away. Walked away. Here are the keys. Turn the lights out when you leave. Oh, you're not leaving? Okay. The other thing, too, is we left a lot of Americans there. service members as well as non-service members, but American citizens, we left them behind. We left and threw to the wolves the Afghans who assisted our operations. They're all dead. Dead. Those who weren't taken out, dead. Hey, thanks for your service. Bang. I didn't know this, and I'm angry for not knowing this. This is cut B. This is video B. It's 3 minutes. Almost, yeah, it's 3 minutes long. But listen to this. Watch this. I didn't know this. Chat, did you? That the person, the man, allegedly on the ground that was behind the attack was just brought into the U.S. Did you know this? Let's go to cut B. Here it is, cut B.
Breaking news. The man intelligence officials say is behind the suicide bombing in 2021 that killed 13 U.S. service members during that military withdrawal from Afghanistan is now on U.S. soil and is facing a judge about an hour from now in Virginia.
3.5 years ago, ISIS terrorists killed 13 American service members and countless others in the Abbey Gate bombing during the disastrous and incompetent withdrawal from Afghanistan. Not that they were withdrawing, it was the way they withdrew. Perhaps the most embarrassing moment in the history of our country. Tonight I am pleased to announce that we have just apprehended the top terrorist responsible for that atrocity, and he is right now on his way here to face the swift sword of American justice.
And this is a view inside that airplane carrying the man back to the United States. That is FBI Director Kash Patel, Attorney General Pam Bondi, National Intelligence Director Tulsi Gabbard, and CIA Director John Ratcliffe in that picture there. So let's get a CBS News Department of Justice correspondent, Scott McFarland. He is live outside that Virginia courthouse. Scott, nearly 4 years later, an arrest. What led up to this?
Yeah, we expect to see this defendant to lay eyes on him mid-afternoon here at the federal courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia, and find out what led up to this arrest, the sequence of events that were there. We know that the Department of Justice is going to seek felony charges, material support of terrorism charges against Sharifullah for his alleged role in the Abbey Gate attack. We also expect they'll seek to hold Sharifullah in pretrial detention nearby to keep him in custody pending future hearings in his case. In an affidavit filed with the court and unsealed at some point during or just after Trump's speech last night, the FBI alleges Sharifullah was in charge of some form of surveillance and route planning for the attack at Abbey Gate, the attack that killed 13 U.S. service members and nearly 170 others in Afghanistan at the Karzai airport there. They're making the argument he was a critical component of that attack. And what's more, Liz, they're also arguing he played roles in other attacks, including at a Moscow nightclub last year and at a U.S. security checkpoint, a military checkpoint in Afghanistan in 2016. All of this is expected to be laid out by prosecutors as they make their case to the magistrate judge here as to why they want Sharifullah held in detention pending trial.
And Scott, we know the Justice Department filed a motion to keep this case sealed. Why is that?
It was noteworthy. That motion was filed over the weekend, at some point just before or just after the arrest was executed. And it should be noted the arrest was executed at Dulles International Airport just down the road. The argument they made was the case needed to be sealed to protect witnesses, to protect evidence, to protect the security of the case. They then filed a motion to unseal it about 48 hours later, either during or just after President Trump's address, giving him the opportunity, deliberately or not, for a moment, a memorable moment, during his address to the joint session of Congress.
Scott McFarland live outside that courthouse in Virginia. We're going to be following this case very closely, and we'll check in again with you a little bit.
Did you know that, folks? Or I mean, was I out to lunch? I could have been. I could have been otherwise preoccupied, but I didn't know that happened within the last, 2 months. I could get you the exact date, but I wasn't aware of that. And I'm just curious how many people were listening live right now, and feel free. Yeah, I knew about it or didn't know about it, but I thought that was very, very interesting. But there's another part to this. You know, I often say, and you've often heard the phrase, events, certain things. I mean, nothing happens in a vacuum, right? So I got to thinking about the inside sources within the intelligence community I once had, no longer have, due to a number of circumstances. In certain cases, they've been replaced. In other cases, they haven't. But I still maintain contacts within the intelligence agency. It's agencies, plural. And I'll just add this, one within the military, okay? Because those are really two distinctly different areas of operation. One more thing about the Abbey Gate. That alone should have resulted in the expulsion. In my view, the hanging, okay, seriously, after a trial of Biden and the military individuals behind this. Remember, President Trump had an outline of the withdrawal. The Biden regime didn't stick to the outline, made changes, and as a result, this is what happened. What happened was absolute carnage. For that, and that alone, everyone who touched that withdrawal plan, in my view, should be put on trial and dealt with accordingly. If found guilty. This is cut or video E, and these are out of order because of a chronological issue. But video E, you remember when the 13 baskets or 13 metal coffins of our service members arrived at Dover. What was a big thing about Biden, his appearance, and Joe Biden's appearance? That's right. He kept checking his watch. Of course, the media would show him checking his watch only one time. And then, of course, about that, one of the fathers of the fallen, one of the fathers of a soldier who fell, who was murdered in that attack, in the congressional testimony, answered, and you've probably seen this, and forgive my language ahead of time, but I'm not going to tiptoe around his response. But his comment about Biden was simply, it's too fucking 30. The outrage not contained by the alleged or the supposed decorum of Congress. Unless you've lost a child, and I know there are members watching and listening, subscribers and viewers, and You've got no idea. No one can explain it. No one can explain it to you. Nobody can explain it to you. But losing a child in that manner, in that way, that all 13 were murdered, and the complicity exists within the Biden regime. That was 4 years ago. But again, things like that don't happen in a vacuum. You go back to, you can go back as far as Vietnam and further still. But okay, I mean, you got to kind of stop somewhere for conversation. The bankers, all wars are bankers' wars. You know that. Military-industrial complex, you know all about that. But the infrastructure needs people to operate it. So who are these people? Which, again, conforms it's part of the show, the anatomy of the most important battle we're facing, or that faces us today. And that's the... It's not revenge. It's not retribution. It's accountability and justice. That's the battle that we face. But I mentioned about the Biden watch, checking his watch. Everyone, I'm sure everyone listening or watching this, you know, he checked his watch. But did you know this? And again, I watched the hearings live, but I didn't know this. I don't know if I missed it. I don't know if I was moved by the passion of that one, really of the families of the victims during the testimony. I don't know, but I missed this. See if you missed it too. This is cut E. I think it's just under a minute. Here it is.
To the checking of his watch, that didn't happen just once. That happened on every single one that came out of that airplane. It happened on every single one of them. They would release the salute and he looked down at his watch on every last one, all 13, he looked down at his watch. And as a father, you know, seeing that and the disrespect and hearing from his former leaders, one of his master sergeants said exactly what you just said, that this was avoidable, that they left them over there. They had them over there and let them down. In reference to,
I'm telling you,
checking of his.
Yeah, that's oh man, how heartbreaking is it? But how the other part of this, and really, you can't separate the heartbreak from the betrayal. The betrayal, and it wasn't. You know how people lie. You can lie or you can omit the truth. Lie by omission or lie by commission. Either way, it's a lie. Either way, it's a lie. And those who have been caught lying, whether it's to the public or whether it's in a congressional setting or to an investigative agency such as the FBI, such as it was, or to in a military setting, they're all co-conspirators. They're all co-conspirators and need to be held accountable. But again, none of this happened in a vacuum. Subsequent to 9/11, the panopticon of surveillance was really energized by FISA. We're going to be getting to that in a second or a little bit. By the creation of the FISA, the secret courts and secret warrants and all this. Oh, guaranteed not to be used on American citizens. Yet that's exactly what it was used for and is still to this day being used for. George Weenie Bush, George W. Bush, and really all of the members of Congress during his 8 years of crap in the White House are responsible for the enslavement of us at the moment. And apparently it's a willing enslavement for many. And I say that because I don't hear a lot of people saying, you know, we need to change this, or we need to put pressure on the right people to change this, or we need to get the torches and pitchforks out and to go down to D.C. If you're not going to do it by my very nice and polite request, then maybe we should up the ante a little bit. And we're getting to that point. I have to say, we're getting to that point. But going back after Weenie Bush, you know, the spawn of the satanic George Herbert Walker Bush, who couldn't remember where the hell he was the day Kennedy was assassinated, except he was in Dallas, leaning against the doorpost of the Dallas Book Depository. Yeah. But under George Weenie Bush, all of this, because of 9/11, all of this kind of came to fruition. This building of the surveillance apparatus that we see today, that in fact is serving as the platform for what's happening today. And you know, when things die down, or when events when conditions exist where you need to, or the rulers, the deep state, they need to actually commit another atrocity for a specific purpose, or maybe a group of people just know too much about something. In every case in history, going back to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, by the way, that there was a verified conspiracy to kill not just Lincoln, but a number of his cabinet members. And did you know that? Oh, it's verified, not discussed, but verified. John Wilkes Booth was but one of the conspirators. So you take that and you move forward and advance, you know, to Kennedy. And I mean, even before that, McKinley and for the attempts on Ford, which, for crying out loud, I can't figure that one out or those out, but okay. And through the most recent attempts on President Trump's life. But sometimes people know too much about things. I had the honor to have on and off air conversations. As a matter of fact, I'm going to try to find the program where Charles Strange appeared. Does that name ring a bell to anyone in the chat right now? Charles Strange. His son was a member of SEAL Team 6. And just, well, August 6th of 2011, Extortion 17, that's the call sign of the helicopter, was taken out by explosion. And it was an inside job. This month, 14 years ago, Extortion 17, August 6, 2011, a CH-47 Chinook helicopter. The official story is, oh, it crashed. Something happened. It crashed. It killed 38 people aboard, including 30 Americans, American service members, and Bart, a military service dog. But there was something really strange about Extortion 17. That was 6 months after the alleged takedown, yay, of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. You remember that? By SEAL Team 6. Among other assets, but primarily. Now, think about this for a second. Think about 2011, what was happening there post 9/11, but in 2011, 10 years hence, things were starting to get a little bit weird in the sandbox, but also with the military itself. Under Bush and then under Obama, it ramped up under Obama. But specifically under Bush, things were taking place big time. But then Obama came in, you know. The Muslim commander in chief. You might not agree with that. The CIA legend, CIA asset, and Lord knows how many other intelligence agencies had their hands on Obama, guiding him throughout his reign. But Extortion 17, folks, do you realize how much money, how much time, how much effort it takes to train the best of the best of the best in American military? And SEAL Team 6 is the best of the best of the best. Seventeen Navy SEALs were killed in that takedown of the helicopter. And it was a freaking inside job. Because I didn't have time to look for the episode that where we had Charles Strange on. And let me tell you something. That man is a great guy. I mean, just like you and I, okay? But one pissed off dude. And to hear the entire story of what he got from the military, ultimately from his research alone, and this guy is a pit bull, but was a pit bull to find answers, and not to the exclusion of everyone else, but he stands out. I mean, he told me off air, I think on air too. Hey, this was an inside job. This was planned. Every part of this was planned by people supposedly on our side. At the top, from the top on down. Now, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth. This is the recollection of the conversation. And believe me, you spend 5, 10, 15 minutes on the phone with Charles Strange. I guarantee, I mean, that guy's a class act, but I'll tell you what, he knows what the hell he's talking about. And you don't forget. You don't forget when you talk to him. But here is video C and Charles Strange. A couple of years after the event, he was at the National Press Club where Eric and I were. Eric and I spent some time at the National Press Club, not for this, but for another reason. That's where we picked up an FBI tale. I actually met Dr. Corsi and a number of, hung with another, I can name drop it, screw it. Got to know some people. But this event took place at the National Press Club. Watch the entire link. The link's going to be at Hagman PI. Watch the entire video. It's worth it. It's on NPR. Believe it or not. My goodness. Okay. And once I find the original broadcast, which was closer to the time he got the materials he's going to reference in this, and he was finding things out, man, he was loaded for bear when he appeared on our show. But take a listen and take a watch of this. This I'm going to let play for about 5 minutes. The entire thing is, I don't know, a couple hours long, but 5 minutes. And other family members of the other fallen spoke as well. In addition to Trento, I believe, Congressman Trento. If I have his name correct and from memory. But this is all part of the matrix of the lies, the matrix of the deception that's being placed upon each and every one of us. And if you listen to Charles Strange, this should motivate all of us to demand not just accountability, not just exposure and accountability, but demand justice. I don't care if this happened in 1995 or 2025. If you were part of a seditious, are part of a seditious conspiracy, we want a piece of your ass. In fact, we don't want a piece of your ass. We want your entire ass along with the rest of your body, and we want to display it proudly in a manner befitting the crime. This is cut C. Charlie Strange. Please, please pay attention. It's heartbreaking. Here it is.
A little bit of behind-the-scenes information. With me is the prime driver of putting all of this together, and I'm telling you, there are generals and admirals and SEALs and
Eric,
everything assembled here.
An hour and eight. I think that's the start of that video. It's on Brighteon. I believe the platform is on Brighteon. At least it's not on friggin' YouTube. This is important. SEAL Team 6. By the way, I know pretty much everyone listening and viewing knew about this or recalls, but how many, yes or no, have you heard about Extortion 17 lately, even though it happened 14 years ago this month, and it was the greatest loss of SEAL Team members ever? Just yes or no in the chat. Have you heard about it lately? I'm just curious. Man, it's like almost like it never happened, except to our country and the families of those who were murdered. Yeah, nothing recently. Thank you for answering that. I didn't think so. There's a lot of things that aren't talked about that have happened within the last quarter century that are so important to the things that are happening today, but yet no one mentions a word. Hey, there are conservative commentators I have sent communications to. Got nothing back. And say, remember this or remember that? Hey, remember downtown? Remember that bombing on Christmas, Nashville? What about the shooting in Vegas? Remember that? But let's go to the cut right now. Charlie Strange. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So that's fine. Can we play? Let's move on for a moment here. Because Charlie, you got to hear from Charlie. It's okay. He's okay with me. He beat the hell out of me if not. But September 11th, 2012. Ring a bell to anyone? Benghazi. And I'm so sick and tired of seeing and reading and these pundits and these blue-haired pinko people who, you know, well, we're tired of hearing about Hillary's emails. What difference does it make? You know, that kind of stuff. Kind of channeling Hillary. But you talk about one evil woman, and that is Hillary Clinton. But you also look, and she was Secretary of State at the time. On September 11th, 2012, when the attack in Benghazi happened. And this was one event that we found ourselves, this platform found ourselves on the radar of the FBI, because we were speaking to the filmmaker, the maker of the film, supposedly responsible for all of this. In fact, we had him on this program. He would only stay on for 15 minutes. Really cagey. It was a really cagey interview. The guy was cagey. The reason I mention that is because we were one of the very first. In fact, the night it happened, well, the morning, I should say, was the morning that the night after the morning there that it happened, I was contacted by an intelligence asset. And in total, I probably spent 4 to 5 hours over the next 3 days talking with this intelligence asset who said, look, Benghazi was not an attack on an embassy, consulate, or anything else affiliated with transactional issues with the U.S. This was a CIA outpost disguised or pretending to be, but not really pretending, because they didn't do anything there except run weapons, munitions, and people. It was a CIA compound with an annex. And the annex, you couldn't get to the annex like a straight line. It was, you had to go around, kind of like around the block, if you will. But stationed at this location was the U.S. ambassador to Libya. And this happened on September 11th, 2012, as I mentioned. But in July, before this happened, in July of the same year, you had the Iranian Red Crescent attempt to breach a wall at that compound. Now, there's a whole big backstory, foundational story about the attacks, plural, at the CIA compound in Benghazi. A lot of things that led up to that. So the CIA director, Hillary Clinton, and Obama at the time needed to blame this on something. And so they blamed it on some obscure video that had like 6 views on CommyTube, YouTube. The Innocence of Muslims, which was in like its 4th iteration of, it was the lowest budget, low. It was just it was a joke. And anyone with a half a brain understood it was a joke. But that's what it was blamed on. And the news, they were mandated to report on this. Hey, I spoke with a filmmaker. I interviewed the filmmaker off air. I interviewed one of the characters, screen characters, who had to go into hiding on off air. And is, to my knowledge, if not dead, is still out of the country. This has John Brennan written all over it. Remember John Brennan for later. Because, you know, John Brennan. But the architect, in my view, of this entire operation on the ground was Brennan. But in the boardroom was Hillary Clinton. And at the highest of levels was Barack Hussein Obama. I can't get over Hussein as a middle name. And America was okay with that. You're just less than a decade after 9/11. If you believe the original story of 9/11, where you had Muslim terrorist hijackers, and then you elect a guy with a middle name Hussein. Oh, but all Muslims aren't different. Bullshit. If you're a true, I guess, Orthodox Muslim, you know how people say Orthodox. I mean, if you're a true Orthodox Muslim, there's no other religion. There's no room for any debate. You either convert or die. You're either taxed or die. Simple as that. Let's not beat around the bush. So many people have been banned, shut off, deplatformed, depersoned for speaking the truth. I'll tell you what. I don't give a crap anymore. I'll tell you what I know. We'll go to cut D, since we're on the subject of Benghazi. Hey, don't believe me. Sean Smith was there. He was one of the four Americans who died out of ammo. He was fighting CIA. Okay, just saying, CIA. And imagine fighting off unexpectedly, fighting out. Well, no. There was a little bit, then I won't get into it because, folks, you know the story. And when I was listening to this and hearing this information about Benghazi from my source, who said that assistance could have been dispatched from Italy but was denied at the highest levels. Imagine yourself or imagine your son being on the rooftop defending themselves from certain death and then firing the last bullet, being out of ammo and knowing what your fate is. And you've got Obama, who actually disappeared for a number of hours. If you go to HagmanPI.com, I have a lot of written information about Benghazi. And all you have to do is go to the search feature at HagmanPI.com and just type in Benghazi. It'd be well worth your time, because a lot of the players then, you're going to be hearing more about today. I mean, in the near future. Because I'm telling you, Alex Jones said something on Sunday. And I know exactly who he spoke with, because I spoke with that individual as well. About things that are coming up. Folks, it wasn't like the QAnon or Q days, okay, where, there's thousands of sealed indictments and, you know, there are Hillary Clinton's and Gitmo and on and on. What a load of crap. And you try to tell people, what a load of crap. And then they hate you. I don't deal in hopium. I don't deal in bullshit. I mean, I'm sorry. I just don't. I don't have time anymore. Do you understand what I mean? I don't have time anymore. I'm not dealing in... I'm going all in. I'm all in. Here's video D. Patricia Smith, the mother of Sean Smith. Gosh, my heart goes out to her and her family and all the families. But listen to who she blames. Again, don't take my word for it. Here's Patricia Smith. During a congressional hearing, I believe this was during a hearing. I've watched so much footage, I'm confused. But here it is, video D.
I talked to Sean the night before the terrorist attack. He told me, "Mom, I am going to die." All security had been pulled from the embassy, he explained. And when he asked why, he never received a response. Nobody listened. Nobody seemed to care. The very next day, he was murdered by radical Islamic terrorists. To this day, I don't even know why a computer guy like Sean was sent to Benghazi. That night, we lost sons, brothers, fathers, and husbands. We lost four brave Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice for the country they chose to serve, and the American people lost the truth. For all of this loss, for all of this grief, for all of the cynicism the tragedy in Benghazi has wrought upon America, I blame Hillary Clinton.
What difference does it make? At this point, what difference does it make? That was Patricia Smith, obviously not during a congressional hearing. My bad, but understand this. She cited that as an embassy. And you don't have to forgive people because it's easy to say embassy or consulate or whatever and repeat. I mean, I catch myself sometimes using the improper, the wrong words. That was just one, but okay. You might ask yourself, well, out of all of the potential, why that? Why Patricia Smith? And by the way, if memory serves me correctly, she does have a medical issue. Okay. But in this one, she raises a good point. Why was my cryptographer, why was he even there? That's part of the bigger picture. That was a weapons smuggling hub for North Africa, Western Europe, and the Middle East, funneling terrorist weapons, American-trained terrorists, weapons from Libya and other areas in the Middle East, up through into places like Turkey and outside of a number of locations, but ultimately into Syria. And why? Because they wanted the war in Syria. Why is that even important today? I mean, my goodness, Doug, you went from extortion 17, which I can understand 4 years ago, but then you're going back to Benghazi. Or you went, I mean, Abbey Gate, which was, you know, 4 years ago, then extortion 17, which was 12 years ago, now Benghazi, which was, goodness, even longer than that. Or, I'm sorry, later than that, 13 years ago. Well, there are connective fibers here. This is all military now. Well, no, this is all military and intelligence, military and intelligence agency activities. This is the international part of the deep state. This is the, and as well, this is the money making. I mean, this is where the real money's at. You know, when missiles cost $1 million a pop and your profit margin's 25% and you divvy it up. Hey, you know what? You need a few hundred, money starts to add up. How many people? Now, in the midst of all this, I got to grab this. Let me see if I. Oh, while I'm grabbing what I want to mention, if we have it's a BitChute video of Charlie Strange. Again, I said you have to really watch this and watch him. The complexity of how this was covered up. This is now, I'm talking about Extortion 17. How this was, the complexity of how it was covered up. And who was responsible for the cover-up needs to be addressed. Because again, when you overlay Benghazi, Extortion 17, chronologically, Extortion 17, Benghazi, and then Abbey Gate, many of the same people exist on each of these main events. But here's Charlie Strange talking you through this interesting period of disclosure or lack thereof, but what he kind of found through his own research, grueling research, I might add, because let me tell you from experience, not easy to look at a coroner's report or an autopsy of your son. Not easy. Take my word for it. Or take Charlie Strange's word for it. But still having problems? All right, well, screw it then. The link will be in the program description box. He goes into detail, in summary, he goes into detail about how the military lied to him, gave him a book with nothing in it. Gee, does that sound familiar? It ultimately gave him a CD along with the other family members. And from that CD, he was able to piece together irrefutable evidence that was inexplicably, potentially erroneously disclosed about how this was all a setup. Oh, you haven't? Okay. Now let's play it then. Go ahead.
I next want to introduce Charles Strange, whose son Michael died, also a Navy SEAL, and his wife, Marianne Strange.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Charles Strange. My son's name was Michael Strange. Michael was a cryptologist for special ops. He was part of the Navy SEALs for SEAL Team 2 for a few years, and last almost 4 years he was part of SEAL Team 6. Michael was a brave American. He loved Philadelphia, where we're from, and he fought for this country. And Michael being a crypto, the code for them is servant silence. And that silence was broken by our administration. And all of a sudden there's movies, SEAL Team 6, documentary, SEAL Team 6, SEAL Team 6, this. Where did it all start? Joe Biden in Delaware in a tuxedo with a half a load on, telling everybody it was the elite Navy SEAL team. And this is our vice president? Come on, man. You know? Michael knew what he was getting into. Michael knew what he was fighting for. Michael knew that someday he might have to give the ultimate sacrifice. And, but not like this. To put my son in the most elite SEAL team in the world in a Chinook helicopter over an active battle that's going on for 3.5 hours. Unacceptable. unacceptable. Somebody has to answer for this. You know? A Chinook from 1985. You know? Look outside the picture. You know? Who's getting paid to keep rebuilding these Chinooks? Who's making the money? Right? 93 days after killing bin Laden, all of a sudden you're going to put 22 of the most elite in SEAL Team 6 in the world and 8 other great Americans into a Chinook over the battle. August 6th, I got the call about my son's death. It's like a knife in my heart that turns every day. I cry every day. I get sad every day. My other children, you know. Michael's 25 years old. And we go to Dover to see the bodies. And we're all in the hangar down there. And President Obama comes up to me and he says, Mr. Strange, he grabs me by the shoulders. Michael changed the way America lives. I grabbed Mr. President by the shoulders and I said, I don't need to know about my son. I need to know what happened, Mr. President. And the Secret Service guys grabbed me. And I'm crying. And he went to give me a hug. And I whispered in his ear, I said, Mr. President, is there going to be a congressional inquiry? And Mr. President whispered in my ear, and I could feel his lips touching. He said, Mr. Strange, we're going to look into this very, very, very deep. Well, I haven't heard nothing. October, we went down for General Colt's assessment of the investigation. We get there. They have a projector screen. The families are there. He's going over. What happened? He said it went through a chain of command for this landing site. I raised my hand. I said, sir, could I have the names of that chain of command? His neck snaps. He said, it's in the book, sir. I said, how about the black box? Black box got blown away by the flood in Afghanistan. Come on. Can't find the black box, which is really orange. I looked it up in the Google. Them black boxes don't go away. They lose black boxes in the swamps in Florida, and they find them. You're going to tell me you can't find the black box? Not acceptable. I tell my boss stuff like that, I get fired. Right? My son's 25-year-old son got set up and killed. So this goes on about, it's in the book, it's in the book. I have the book right here. They didn't put no ink in it. How can you give me a book with no ink in it? I call up the command. They said, we got a lot of complaints about that. I said, well, send me another one. We burned it. You burned it? They gave us a disk. Put the disk in the computer. It's whited out. See two sentences. It's whited out. My beautiful wife, I'm looking at it. I said, we have to do something with this disk. My wife, the genius, it's not me. Michael's stepmother, my heart and soul. We print it out. We print the disk out. It tells you everything. It was a setup. The Taliban sitting there with machine guns, motorcycles, phones. Who called them to tell them? Right? In the paperwork. Karen mentioned it. Billy mentioned it. General Colt's asking questions. What happened to the air controller? Did you check the area out? They were going into the Tangine Valley. Tangine Valley, it says in here, is the stronghold for the Taliban. You're going to put them in over the stronghold of the Taliban? Did anybody check the area out? Here it is, right here. Everybody can get a copy. It says, it's very brief again. It's out of the task force, blank. And it says something to the effect that over 100 Taliban plan to travel from Providence through the Tangine Valley to possibly shoot down the coalition force.
I had him stop right there. I would suggest you watch his entire, as well as his wife, their disclosures and exposure of that incident. Within that disclosure, it was almost like a Caesar cipher or some sort of Native American. Well, that's too easy. But they did decode or essentially found information that would implicate people on the inside. Imagine that. But the worst mass murder of our SEAL team members. And it's still, nothing's been done. 14 years ago, this month. It was during this time. And folks, thank you for bearing with me. But if you, I like cohesiveness. It's not that I'm trying to, what I'm not trying to do is create order out of chaos or see patterns that aren't there. But events that we have forgotten about that I'll call hinge moments in history that can be related to each other, either by the individuals involved or by the motives or by both. They need to be revisited once in a while. And one of the issues that fits that bill, one of the issues that is important to talk about are of course, you've got the murder in Washington, D.C. with respect to WikiLeaks. You have the DNC hack, which wasn't a hack, which was a transfer because of the murder. Diane Rodham, the Yak Clinton involved in all that. But one thing that's not talked about, and folks, again, in the chat, has anyone talked about this recently? And that is the subject of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Awan brothers, AWAN, the Awan brothers. Have you heard anything about that recently? For those who have no clue what I'm talking about, if you go back to 2016, roughly, 2016, 2017, we were talking about this quite a bit. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, this Democratic congresswoman from Florida, the crusty old soul she is, back in 2004-2005, hired Imran Awan as an IT staffer, actually hired, it was part of a group of Congress critters who hired Imran Awan as an IT professional. Now, Imran had a brother, actually two brothers, Abid and Jamal. And with those two, primarily with those two, and there were other siblings and friends involved, they formed this IT services group that exclusively served and serviced the IT needs of this group of Democratic Socialist congressmen. Well, in fact, it must have been a great gig because they made over $4 million. And better still, that's on the books, but better still, they had access to computers and emails of over 800, count them, 800 lawmakers and staffers, including and especially members of the House Intelligence Committee and Foreign Exchange Committee. Yeah. well, what's wrong with that if they're good? No, they basically use car salesmen, in one case, literally. They were caught. Imran and his brother were caught back in 2016. Smuggling information. There's a better way of saying this, and certainly more of a backstory and more involved, but essentially, you know, smuggling information from the computers. Oh, a bunch of stuff happened. In fact, Wasserman Schultz claimed that she lost her laptop, and my goodness, the head of Capitol Police found it and wouldn't give it back to her right away because, well, why? Because it was still the subject of an investigation. So she filed a complaint against him, and it was a whole big dust up. But, you know, like everything else, nothing ever became of it. Imran and Awan and Jamal and, you know, Fred Barney and whoever else. No big deal. Slap on the wrist at most. What's pretty interesting about this, Wasserman Schultz, she was the subject of that investigation. But she threatened the chief of the U.S. Capitol Police with consequences. If remember that computer that I said that was stolen and then suddenly turned up and the Capitol Police found and all that? If that wasn't returned right then, you're going to face consequences. And the administrator for the House of Representatives came to that Capitol Police officer's aid, she said, "You're a fucking Islamophobe." Why? Because of sticking up for the police officer. But the House administrator banned the Owan brothers from touching the House computers, which really displeased, apparently, according to the language, displeased Wasserman Schultz. But again, in 2017, Imran, he was arrested in July 2017 at Dulles. It was really a no big deal. I mean, no, because it could happen to any one of us, right? He was arrested at Dulles while attempting to leave the country, go to Pakistan. He was carrying, like we all do, carrying travel money, 12 grand in cash. But like we all do, ahead of his trip, he wired nearly $300,000 to his ultimate destination in Pakistan. His wife also left the country successfully with $12,000 in cash. But the other thing, too, is the FBI seized the hard drives, which Imran Awan had smashed prior to his departure. Again, the story is long and twisted, but the criminality is just over the top. And the chutzpah, I guess, I don't know if that's a great word to use, but the temerity of Wasserman Schultz to blame Islamophobia for blocking access of these two Muslim terrorists from the House computers and from, okay. It's mind bending. And then we ask, well, gee, Cash and Dan, and I'm not protecting these people, but what the hell are you doing? What's taking so long? This has got a lot. I mean, everything that we're facing and fighting is really a product of the last 25 years. Now, again, it goes back farther than that, but this is a product of the last quarter century. And these are some of the same people that you're going to see. And now, at this point, I want to talk about, are we moving, are we advancing the game ball down the field? Are we making any headway? I mentioned Alex Jones on Sunday. He had a 40-minute broadcast, and I was notified by Leon about this. And I want to thank Leon. Leon, thank you very much for our communications and for you. But I had heard him live, and he was saying he's got a high-level source, and things are going to be moving rapidly. And I can tell you that I know who that source is. And yes, I've got that source and another source. There are grand juries right now being formed in various states. I know four states, right, for sure. Four states, I believe, have completed. And I think there's probably another three to five states that are gathering grand juries for the purpose of prosecuting pretty much many of the people I mentioned that were involved in events I mentioned, such as Brennan, who's been around forever. Clapper, Comey. Yes, yes. But you know, like they started with Bolton, who's hasn't been arrested. But yet, it's interesting, Bolton, John Bolton, pretty much confessed to sharing classified, unauthorized classified information. He wrote a book about it. He wrote a flipping book about it. He could, that's basically his confession. Book 2020-2021, it came out. He admitted to it. Now, obviously, not in a fashion where you would read it as a confession. But my goodness, you talk about a gift to investigators. The Biden DOJ did nothing. Because they know that you start pulling on that string, a lot of bad things are going to fall out. And I don't think John Bolton wants to go to prison. I'm just saying, I don't know if he's going to have a choice. But I've been a big critic, a vocal critic of not seeing perp walks. And that was acknowledged in my conversation. Just and I don't know. I haven't spoken to Alex Jones, but I don't know exactly what he was told. But from that 39 or 40 minute video, I don't know how many people saw that on Sunday, where he said grand juries are being formed, that they're looking at a lot of people, some relatively high level. I got the same thing. And again, I mentioned earlier, this is not like that Q stuff. This is, and again, if you believe in Q, whatever, okay, whatever. But any results from that yet? This is going to turn results. Before I go on, and I want to close hard with that. Because you've got to really, in my view, it took me a long, hard, it was difficult for me to really wrap my head around the information I got. I'm not saying it was complicated. I was saying, okay, during that conversation, I said, okay, then what? Then what do you see happening? Then where do you see this going? I had so many questions. Outside of the basic information that was offered, there was like, well, we don't know. We don't know where this will lead. We know what we have. We know what we could present. But, you know, grand juries, I mean, sometimes who knows? So we're looking for the venues that'll be effective. We're looking for the people that we've got the absolute goods. We have that would stand, that would survive a trial. And in some cases, we have that now, today. Some we've had for a while. But this is different. This is a lot different. You're going to see. In fact, let's go out of order here when I speak about this, but I'm going to revisit this. Let's go to video 2. This is video 2. This is Matt Gaetz. And I'm not sure how many people saw this. If you did, great. If you didn't, it's only 39 seconds out of your time. Matt Gaetz on the deep state coup. Listen to who he mentions. Because those people were mentioned to me as targets of the grand juries. The criminal grand, grand juries. Here's cut 2. Here it is.
Without a doubt that Obama, Brennan, Clapper, and Comey were attacking our democracy, all while accusing us of attacking democracy. We know these things because Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard has released hundreds of documents revealing that the mindful objections of senior intel officials were ignored. Foreign spies were given a U.S. government-endorsed platform to smear Trump with abject lies. They used these lies to illegally spy on the Trump campaign. Former CIA Director John Brennan lied to Congress about his role. The cover-up effort was real. Now that Director Gabbard has revealed the truth, where will it all lead? We now know without a doubt that Obama...
So there you have additional independent investigation that those individuals are under the microscope. Those individuals are going to be the targets of the investigations. And when you take information that Jones got, that Alex got, and that I received, and then of course it corresponds with that. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, okay, this is different. And the information, again, I'm just sharing you what was told to me. The information that I received is going to lead to others in higher positions. How high if you're the head of the CIA, for crying out loud, or the FBI, how much higher can you go? And not just that, but people in the positions, the same positions, either previously or subsequent to those individuals. For example, Comey, FBI. What about the individual before him or before that person or after that person, McCabe, and others? You know the names. Mary McCord came up as one. Nellie and Bruce Orr came up as two additional names. Watch for these. Watch for them. The timeline I received, and I believe from memory, this is consistent with what Alex Jones got, was within, well, I'm going to give it this, within 6 to 12 months, you're going to see some big dominoes fall. Okay. And you might think that's a hell of a long time, but in this case, let the process work out, because this is going to be a punch to the gut of a lot of pink hair, blue hair, body pierced, tatted up liberal lunatics. And older people who just watch CNN. Not an excuse. Just a procedural way of doing things. I think a responsible way of doing things as well. Again, because we have not seen any perp walks, I am not making any excuses. I'm still mad as hell, and I'm still impatient. But I'm also realistic about this. So you might have asked yourself, What the hell were you? You spent so friggin' much time on all of these past events in the military and all of this and the spies and Wasserman Schultz. My goodness, Imran Awan and Jamal and Amir and again, Fred and Barney and, you know, why? Did you stroke out when you were talking? No. Because we're in a fight right now, a fight of our lives. And I mentioned this during my appearance at WCN. Maybe I was a little bit more coherent. I don't know. But the link for the WCN will be at HagmanPI.com, but both as a video to the original program as well as a link in the program notes. But anyway, people began waking up and seeing things after 9/11. I want to show you this. Remember Bill Moyers? Of course. February of 2014. A gentleman by the name of Lofgren, who's an investigative researcher and author, appeared with Bill Moyers and also wrote an essay. I think this essay in his appearance has value to understand the bigger picture of what's going on today. Now remember, 2014, it's 2014. I'd like to play you just very brief cuts from this, and you can decide if you want to watch the entire thing. It has value. It'll add to your understanding. If you want additional granular knowledge, this will help you. So cut A is from the source video one. The title, interesting title, is Movers - the Deep State. Again, remember, this is 2014, and you think, well, that's not that long ago. It's really not. It's 11 years ago. But then I had a question that I had to address. And that question was, folks, when did the phrase deep state first appear in the U.S.? Anyone want to take a jab at that? The phrase deep state? What year do you think it first appeared, at least in a scholarly sense, in the U.S.? Any ideas? You can throw it in chat if you'd like. I found this to be pretty interesting because I did research it and found it to be true, at least based on my research. The phrase deep state, where is it here? I put it right here. Any takers in chat when that phrase appeared, deep state? Just asking. 1912, Christopher Bick, BSC, right? 1980? Man, you guys like are right on. I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking early 20th century. And I thought, well, maybe when 1984 came out. But then I have a copy. Anyway. Let me clear the suspense for you. The definition, the origin of the definition, the term deep state is an English translation of the Turkish phrase derin devlet. And that came from Turkey during the 1990s. It was used to describe alleged clandestine or conspiracies, networks of military intelligence and criminal elements operating independent of elected officials to influence or control state affairs. Now, who coined that phrase in the Turkish language remains unclear and debated, and really doesn't matter. But it may have first been used by the leftist commentators prior to 96, or possibly by a government minister involved in recruiting assassins linked to the 96 scandal. Folks, you don't need to know that. But the bottom line is, the first scholarly reference to deep state was used in 2007 in a book by Peter Dale Scott titled The Road to 9/11, Wealth, Empire, and the Future of America. Now, you may say, wait a second, you're full of, you know, I'm telling you. Now, you'll see occasional references to deep state, but don't fall for the revisionist history of social media. What deep state appeared to, I don't want to say replace, but what the phrase deep state did was encompass the phrase administrative state. Now, you heard of this. As a matter of fact, there's something called the Administrative State Project, but the administrative state, that term has been used by academics since the 1940s. Its conceptual roots can be traced even back to the Age of Enlightenment. Now, if you want a visual reference, deep state is the umbrella being held by the administrative state. It's the covering, it's the wrapping. But in the context which is it's being used today, it was the mid-90s, again, first published in the context in which it was used by that author, Peter Dale Scott. So, and the administrative state is a phrase, of course, you hear Steve Bannon use it all the time. So why did I even mention that? Is because I think it's important to know who our enemies are, but also to understand that we have a language, that we have to be precise in our language. When Patricia Smith was talking about the murder of her son, Sean Smith, in Benghazi, she said embassy. It was not an embassy. It was not a consulate. It was a CIA outpost. When we refer to the deep state, we can be talking about the administrative state, but certainly the administrative state doesn't, somebody can be part of the administrative state, not the deep state. The deep state is even the word has a deeper, of course, and further entrenched, and I would argue more in charge. And the reason I mentioned that is we need to really make sure our references, our language is right. Okay. That's just my view. You may not agree with it, or you may find references to the phrase deep state earlier, but look at the context in which it's used. All right. So having said all of that, I want to play this from Bill Moyers. This is from Source Video 1. And let me see here. Well, there it is. I buried it in other papers. Very short, but this is cut A. And Eric the Tech, I think it's queued up to the time, if the link is in cut A. And okay, now you can start at the 5 minute mark. What is the deep state? And this is a relatively early view. This was done in 2014, but it adds something here, something that we're seeing today. This is not a prophetic thing. It was, if anything, looking as a researcher, this Mr. Lofgren, and an author, it was more of a product of his research. And what does it include? What does the deep state include? The judiciary, the black robe tyrants. Okay, so watch this. Begin at 5 minutes and we'll end, maybe take it a little bit longer here than 5:45. Maybe take it to 6:15 or so. I'll yell. But watch this and consider the time. Consider 2014. Obama was in the White House. Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State. Brennan, CIA. You had, again, 3, 4, 5 years of all kinds of stuff, or 3 years, all kinds of stuff going on that I mentioned. Extortion 17, Benghazi. Think about, and then Obama in office, but there was kind of an element missing at that time. What was it? It was a judiciary. Watch and listen to this. This is cut A from source video one. There it is.
State. Well, it's all the national security functions of the government. It's the Pentagon. It's Homeland Security. It's the State Department. It's also Treasury, because they have a kind of symbiotic relationship with Wall Street.
For one thing, they control the flow of money.
Absolutely. And that's why there's such a flow, not only of money, but of personnel between Wall Street and the Treasury Department. There's other aspects of government. There's a portion of the judiciary, a small portion of the judiciary, the so-called foreign intelligence surveillance courts. Most of Congress doesn't even know how they operate.
Talk a little bit more about the nexus, the connection between the national security state and Wall Street, because this is a theme that runs through your essay.
Do you know that about 30 blocks north of here, there is a restaurant that will sell you a truffle for $95,000? Also in New York, Christie's sold at auction a painting by Francis Bacon for $142 million. Now, a parallel situation with the national security state, the NSA spent $1.7 billion to build a facility in Utah that will collect 1 yottabyte of information. That's as much information as has ever been written in the history of the world. It costs $400 by the time the Pentagon finishes paying contractors to haul 1 gallon of gasoline into Afghanistan. That's a real extravagant amount of money. In both cases of the national security state and the corporate state, they are sucking money out of the economy as our infrastructure collapses. We have a tinker toy power grid that goes out every time there's inclement weather. Tens of millions of people are on food stamps. We incarcerate more people than China, an authoritarian state with 4 times our population.
Okay, cut right there.
Does anyone...
Now, folks, watch the entire video. And if you can, Eric, cue up cut B. And the cut B is going to be short. And this actually appeared prior to this clip, the clip you just saw. And this couldn't be more prophetic. It couldn't be more predictable. What is happening today by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, that's Tulsi Gabbard, who's doing an outstanding job, who just got rid of 40% of the workforce of the intelligence community, but is pushing for and the engine behind, the true engine behind people like Ed Martin and others, and the true engine behind the establishment of the grand juries. And again, not directly, there's a lot of curves and hills and valleys, but I'm just saying, I'm telling you right now, the exposure, but the accountability and pray to God justice is going to reach higher than those mentioned to this point. And here is, wow, here's a statement made about Obama and packing the courts and his role in using that definition of the deep state. This is cut B of source video one, available in the show notes, HagmanPI.com. Here it is.
Government is broken. It's dysfunctional. It's gridlocked. Well, that's true. And that is the visible government, the constitutional government we learn about in Civics 101. And it is gridlocked. But somehow Obama can go into Libya. He can assassinate U.S. citizens. He can collect all our phone records without a buy or leave from anyone. He can even bring down a jet carrying a president of a sovereign country without asking anyone's permission. And no one seems to connect the two, the failure of our visible constitutional state and this other government that operates according to no constitutional rules or any constraint by the governed.
Okay. Huh. Huh. Yeah, assassinate a U.S. citizen. I mean, not that that doesn't happen now and hasn't happened before, but, you know, for a public admission like that, well, I mean, he didn't have to admit it. It was known. But the tactics discussed there in 2014 were implemented in 2016, were refined in 2020, and now in 2025 are being really dismantled, or the attempts to dismantle right now are being made. But you know who's fighting those attempts? Republican conservatives, conservative members of Congress and the Senate. You have embedded within our institutions, you've got these deep state communist, satanic worshiping, baby loving, and not that way, perverts who worship a different God than we do. But now it's coming. I'm not going to say it's, I'm not saying it's going to be perfect or even it's going to be rapid or it's, we're going to get them all. But what I'm saying is the study of how it was constructed, it does help if you have the blueprints of the construction to deconstruct. We're seeing today. I'm telling you right now, that's what's happening. But you have to know, in my view, you've got to know the anatomy. You've got to know the anatomy of your enemy, of the deep state. If, again, we refer to those entities and individuals as the deep state. You've got to know the anatomy. It helps. I guess you don't have to know, but it sure as heck does help. And you cannot, we must not forget about the incidents that no one is talking about anymore. Oh, you know what? It's great because the popularity of channels that talk about in a flash and make it flashy, you know, the latest and greatest and hey, look over here and look over there and focus on this and this. Without doing the necessary groundwork, the research, you know, I've often said, I was reminded today, Rob from Wisconsin Christian News and I were talking today, and he kind of went over my bio when he introduced me. 35 years as a credentialed investigator. It's been, this year it'll be 40 years. And I've often said during those 40 years, man, the only way you're going to find answers is to get your ass out from out behind the desk and yeah, shoe leather, expend some shoe leather, go out and knock on doors, do the interviews, put yourself on the line, because answers are not going to be found behind a desk or behind a microphone. You have to put in the hard work. I'm telling you. The gentleman, by the way, who commented at WCN, member of the studio audience there, I have a message for you. I pulled out the correspondence you sent about five and a half years ago to me. And it's as relevant to events of today as it was 5 years ago. So thank you for that. But I don't have your permission to publicly name you, so I won't. But see, we tend to forget. It's a lot of people fall for the flash. A lot of people want the character limitation, even with 240 characters or whatever it used to be. You would have too long, didn't read, TLDR. What the hell? What's wrong with people? Too long, didn't read? That's the problem we face today. We can have, and as I've said many times, don't be information collectors. Definitely collect the information, but don't just be information collectors. You have to act upon the information, whether it's to go after a subject you're investigating, a person you're looking into, or whether it's to better your own position. You have to act on the information. Once you have certain information, and I'll tell you one thing that was told to me. I knew this kinda, I guess. I just didn't know the extent to which it had the impact. And that's this. The more information you have, let's take Debbie Wasserman Schultz, for example. The more information you have about her actions, whether it's with the Awan brothers or her activities, or whether it's Letitia James or Fannie Willis, Letitia James with respect to the apartments, Ed Martin being out there Columbo-esque, walking around, getting hassled by Karens who are supporters and ass kissers of James, right? You got to be out there. You got to be doing things. You got to be asking questions. But see, the more information you have about these people, when you write, call, or correspond with your representative, and you happen to drop little things like that in the correspondence, whether it's verbal or written, oh boy, it gets their attention. And you know what else? It gets their staffer's attention. The advice I got was don't hold back. Just drop a mention of certain things. And I guarantee you, according to this source, the responses you'll get are going to be a lot greater than had you not done so. But you have to have the information in order to do that. That's just the tip I got. I don't know. Sounds like it works to me. One thing I want to show you, we can go full screen on this. I'm sorry. This is cut three. This is my wrap up, if you will, for tonight. If you start this at 30 seconds and extend it beyond what I reference as an endpoint, this is a Rumble video, Natalie Winter's War Room with Sam Faddis. This was This was broadcast 3 days ago. No, 4 days ago. I'm sorry. August 22nd, 2025. The biggest hit yet against the deep state. This should tell you something. It did me. Especially after this past weekend. Go ahead and run cut three.
When the Office of Director of National Intelligence was created after 9/11, the idea was you were supposed to have this small staff that would theoretically help all these agencies to talk to each other and coordinate because supposedly 9/11 was a failure in communication. There are a lot of other issues behind 9/11. But in any event, you were supposed to have a very small staff and a director and just coordinate things. It, of course, in classic Washington fashion, ballooned into this monstrosity, just, you know, duplication of effort, layers upon layers of bureaucrats. So the current DNI, Tulsi Gabbard, has been very clear since she got in that she's not letting that stand, and she is making significant cuts, and this is the biggest cut she has made so far, and it's, you know, it is a good start. I support it wholeheartedly. The point of the article was to say it is a good start, but that is all it is, and that's not a knock on the DNI. She knows that.
Very good. Thank you for playing that. Watch the entire segment. The entire segment, I think, is about 11 minutes. I don't know. It's probably that long. But watch the entire segment with Sam Faddis, because he makes some great points about where we're at right now with respect to the fight that we're fighting against the deep state. And although it doesn't seem like we've made some progress, we have. So I want to encourage everyone. I really do. And then I want to kind of close out with a question. I ask you this. And I'd like you to consider this. Well, actually, here's my take on it. Consider my take, okay? If I pose the question to you, what's the bigger threat to our nation, to our way of life, to our liberty? What's the biggest or bigger threat? Is it Russiagate? Or is it Spygate? Those are obviously are terms for the Russia hoax or the FISA spy attempted takedown of President Trump from 2016 onward. What's the biggest threat? Anyone? Spygate. If you are a person of stable and reasonable mindset, you should identify the latter as a much larger, much more ominous threat. Not only in using the NSA, the FISA courts, and using illegal surveillance, not only is that a bigger threat, it's also a threat that remains as current declassified FISA court statements show the NSA database is still functional and is still being exploited against you and against me, against Eric the Tech, and against just about every, well, just about against every citizen of the U.S. So consider when we're looking at what we're fighting, who we're fighting, consider the anatomy, consider the functionality of the different aspects that we discussed, but also remember the little historical hinge moments. I shouldn't say little, the historical hinge moments from Wasserman Schultz's love affair with the Iwan brothers, car salesman, Extortion 17, Benghazi, and of course today, the fourth anniversary. It's not an anniversary, the fourth year of Abbey Gate. It's incredible. I'll be back with more tomorrow. If you like what you heard, like what you saw, please give us a thumbs up. Follow us on Rumble, on X, at Hagmann Report.